All right. For our next presentation, we're going to explore the next generation mobile, AR, VR, and automotive displays with VESA VDCM and MIPI DSI-2. Our presenter will be Alain Legault, VP of IP Products at Hardent. Alain is Vice President of IP Products at Hardent, where he's responsible for spearheading the product definition and development of the company's IP portfolio. He has more than 25 years of experience managing multidisciplinary engineering projects and developing video-related semiconductor products. Let's all welcome Alain.
Hi. So forward, backward?
Forward, backwards.
Okay.
This one. This one's backwards.
Right.
Forward, backwards.
Okay.
And
all right.
All right.
Good.
Okay. Hello, everybody. My name is Alain Legault. So I'm going to be talking to you today about display technology moving in the future and the challenges associated with that. So I've actually mapped out on a graph the increase in bandwidth requirement for the various display technology over the years. So you have the years over from, like, say, 2010 all the way up to prediction over 2025, in sort of 5-6 years from now. And you have logarithmic chart that show the bandwidth requirement in gigabit per second. So you can see that in, 2014, bandwidth requirement for some application was 3, 4, 5 gigabit per second. But things are moving very, very quickly as it's logarithmic shape, and you can see that in a couple of years from now, you're going to have some application will require over 100 gigabit per second of data to fulfill the data to the display. So it's a huge requirement. So the question that I'm going to address today is, how do we handle this? And the challenge is that as the technology, the bandwidth requirement increase a lot. Unfortunately, the increase in PHY technology, whether it's a MIPI DSI or DisplayPort technology or HDMI, are not keeping up with it. So there's a gap which is created and increasing over time. So how do we manage that? That's really what I'm going to be talking about today. So there's really two ways about this. So one way is to obviously add more transport lane and have more data be delivered in parallel. The problem with that is that this approach is sort of going against what people are trying to do, which is to lower power consumption, reducing costs. So by putting more lane in parallel, you're increasing number of pins on ICs, number of wires. The weight of the product is increasing. There's more problem with with EMI. So it's really difficult to do that, and it's not compelling. So an alternative to this is to reduce the bandwidth of video by applying video compression. The challenge with that is to preserve the picture quality, avoid to have too many video artifacts. And obviously, there is some complexity associated with the fact to bring compression technology. And what if also this compression technology adds latency to the system, which is not desired in several applications? So in the past, around the beginning of 2010, there was some proprietary compression technology that were created by various companies. But it's at the time where our company, along with a number of other companies within the VESA Association, worked together to create an industry standard called DSC. DSC stands for Display Stream Compression. The first version was released in 2014, and subsequently a second version was released in 2016. And this is really what DSC tried to address, is to find a good compression technology for display technology. So DSC allowed, through his algorithm, which basically, has a number of different algorithms that work together to deliver visually lossless experience. So you see perfect image. Any type of content will deliver a really good image, whether it's natural images, text, graphic, everything is good. And you get 3x compression, so which allow you to reduce the bandwidth substantially. Due to a sort of clever algorithm, only a single line buffer is required, and that allow to keep the cost of the technology, the compression, fairly low, and also maintain a low latency. Essentially, you achieve latency on the order of like sub 1 microsecond, which is obviously very acceptable. So given that, DSC over the last 5 years have been widely adopted by a number of transport technology. The first standard that adopted DSC was MIPI-DSI from the MIPI organization, but subsequently, DisplayPort technology, embedded DisplayPort transport, HDMI 2.1, and some proprietary transport like HDBaseT have adopted the use of DSC. So because a wide range of transport technology adopted DSC, there's a whole number of applications that have been designed with the use of DSC. So the first one, obviously, been the mobile industry. So, you know, nowadays, literally every mobile make use of video compression over MIPI-DSI. Tablet technology, more recently, GPU has been announced that support DSC, the latest NVIDIA and AMD cards, as well as a chipset like the Ice Lake chipset from Intel, all support DSC. You know, typically, GPU connects to monitor over DisplayPort. Maximum delivery is 32 gigabit per second. With DSC, you're essentially tripling that bandwidth to 90 gigabit per second. AR, VR product, video inside car has started using DSC. And more recently, 8K 60 frame per second television, which require about 64 gigabit of data, are making use of DSC. Since HDMI 2.1 supports DSC. The challenge now is that there is now application that makes even bigger demand for display bandwidth. Think, for example, of mobile display technology. Mobile display resolution has been increasing, but now people are looking to use their mobile as a gaming console. So they need to increase the frame rate from 60 to 120 frames per second. Some mobile needs to be AR, VR ready. People are now looking to have like higher pixel depth on mobile. And think also of foldable mobile. Number of foldable mobile have been released recently. Effectively, now mobile is not one, but two display. So you just double the bandwidth just there. AR, VR is another good example of challenging display technology. In AR, VR glasses, you don't have one, but you have two display for each eyes. Due to the proximity of the display to the eye, the pixel density needs to be very high. And the frame rate also needs to be increased up to, I've seen spec of product being designed with up to 300 frames per second. The reason being that people want to have extremely good fluidity in the display and low latency to avoid motion sickness. Automotive display is also becoming extremely popular. Now you have a couple of display inside car, but car maker are planning to put a lot more display inside car in the future. So that's going to increase a lot the bandwidth requirement. So how do we address this? So we had the DSC technology introduced in 2014, but we can see that the shape is of the curve is going at a steeper rate. So in 2018, last year, VESA created a second industry standard for video compression for display called VDCM, VESA Display Compression Technology. This newer standard has been adopted by the MIPI DSI-2 transport. And I'm going to be talking about VDCM to explain why this new standard will help keeping control over the increase in the display bandwidth. So to compare quickly the two, DSC and VDCM are the two industry standard. They're different algorithms. So DSC was using block predictor and median adaptive predictor and indexed color history, which are different algorithm used to compress the entropy in the image. In order for VDCM to achieve a higher compression capability, which is twice higher than DSC, DSC was able to compress by 3 times. VDCM is able to compress by 6 times. So if you take, for example, a 24 bit per pixel image, with DSC, you could bring it down to 8 bit per pixel. With VDCM, we can achieve 5-6 bit per pixel and even down to 4 bit per pixel, which we're showing in our demo today. So obviously, a lot more compression. The new algorithm are more complex, so they turn the IC complexity into a larger device, but it's still very much reasonable in terms of gate count due to the latest technology like 5-7 nanometer device. There's really no problem to do that. Similarly to DSC, VDCM makes use of only 2.5 line of line buffer. So it's slightly larger than DSC, but still remain a very low latency. For example, at 4K 60, latency would be in the neighborhood about 1.2 microsecond. Obviously, the idea of VDCM is to crank up a lot more pixels and have an extremely high throughput. So DSC architecture was based on 1 pixel per clock for the encoder and 3 pixel per clock for the decoder. In VDCM, the structure is 2 pixel per clock for encoder and 4 pixel per clock for the decoder. So with, for example, fast process, which we operate at maybe, say, 500 megahertz, you could be able to, encode over a gigapixel per second using an encoder. So why VDCM is more performant than DSC is because there are enhanced algorithms. So the two main algorithms that have been changed, the first one is the block predictor. DSC had a fairly simple block predictor that was not so performant. With VDCM, we have a much more performant block predictor that have a very wide search range. So when you're looking at graphic elements inside a picture, this kind of algorithm will be very effective, and due to the wide search range, you can be very efficient at the compression. The second algorithm that was added to VDCM is called the transform mode. the transform mode is kind of similar to the DCT mode leverage in the traditional JPEG and MPEG algorithm. Essentially, it's based on the discrete cosine transform. DSC was using DPCM, delta pulse coded modulation, which is a time domain algorithm. DCT, discrete cosine transform, transform the image into its frequential representation. And typically, when you're using natural images, and you can differentiate high frequency from low frequency element, you can reduce substantially the data set by eliminating the higher frequency content without affecting much the image. And so it is very effective with natural images. And that's new in DSC and VDCM. So VDCM has been launched in 2018 by VISA as a new industry standard. And the work was done in liaison with the MIPI organization. And MIPI rapidly adopted VDCM into the DSI2 version 1.1 specification. So product that are based on MIPI DSI2 can leverage the use of VDCM in the future. So today, VDCM is now being considered by other transport. And I think if you watch what happened with DSC, you're going to have a sort of similar pattern of adoption. Started with MIPI DSI, and then it will be adopted by additional transport moving into the future. I would like to talk about the trends of mobile, AR/VR, and automotive sectors, and see how VDCM can help into these different markets. So if you look at the mobile today, mobile device, the new mobile device and the higher end product needs to be AR/VR ready. People use their mobile for VR application. There is a big move from LCD to OLED technology where people can use now super high resolution pixel depth up to 1500 DPI, extremely high. People now wants to do high dynamic range, HDR technology, so they need 10 or 12 bits where they used to use 8-bit per component. So there's more data there. Higher frame rate, and I mentioned about the foldable phone, which literally doubled the display resolution. And while they do all of this, everybody wants to have long autonomy on their battery, so they want low power consumption. So it's a big challenge. Inside the mobile, there is a device called the DDIC, the Display Driver Integrated Circuit, has typically a frame buffer that holds the bits, the pixel. Now that we're moving into higher resolution device, it used to be that there was 10 megabit of data. Now we're moving into 100 megabit of data. So this is a substantial amount of silicon. So essentially, if you're looking at the device in the last 10 years, it used to be that people were using HD resolution. Now we're moving to 4K, higher frame rate. So when you look at the display bandwidth over the time, essentially, we moved from 1.3 to 29.9 gigabit within 10 years is like a factor of 23. It's a huge increase. So by leveraging VDCM, it's going to be possible to get the benefit of reducing the bandwidth, saving power, maintaining the cost of the device low, and also addressing some issues such as EMI. So if we take specific examples of a VDCM inside a mobile, like a resolution of 4K at 24 bit per pixel, 60 frame per second, with 2.5 gigabit lanes, we're able to address this resolution only would require two lanes. So this is very effective. And we'd be able to have a frame buffer that would be four times smaller by opposition to uncompressed. So there are some big saving to be done there. And, you know, people, as I mentioned, in the last few years, have been using DSC. But with the use of VDCM, effectively, although the implementation is slightly larger, when you look at the system point of view inside the DDIC, the design, the area required for silicon is about three quarter of what's needed for DSC. So there is a saving there, as even if the product is getting to perform more capability. Similarly, in AR/VR, there's really two type of product. There is the console market, where people basically have a tethered application with a console attached to a head device, typically over a DisplayPort interface. So DisplayPort interface is capable to deliver 32 gigabit per second. So with the increased resolution and frame rate, it becomes difficult, and there's basically the bandwidth is saturated. Standalone market, where people have sort of a device, standalone has also a number of challenges. So the use of compression technology is very important there. So if I take, for example, in this kind of architecture, essentially by using compression technology, you can lower bandwidth. Typically inside the device in an architecture like this, there would be essentially a shared memory bus with a unified memory buffer. And by using compressed technology that compressed by six times, you effectively decrease the transfer bandwidth inside the device by six times, which is a huge benefit for power consumption. So that increased greatly the device autonomy and also reduced the challenge for the chip designer to design an architecture like this, and obviously drive the cost low. Last year, we surveyed our member on Visa and tried to forecast the need for display technology for the AR/VR market moving in the future. And essentially, the results were the following. People are predicting that the need for display resolution from this year to 2025 will increase from 2K by 2K to 8K by 8K resolution for AR/VR device. The reason being that you have these display within about an inch from your eyes, so it's very important to have a super high density of pixel. And by the time you get to 8K by 8K, you really don't see the pixels anymore. The frame rate also is going to radically increase, from 60 to 120 to 240 to even to 300 frame per second, and that keeps the latency and the motion very, very low. And and also people are expecting the pixel resolution to increase to 12 bit per component. So obviously this is very, very demanding. So looking at new transport technology emerging, such as DisplayPort 2.0. We know that there's going to be a 10 gigabit per second per lane technology. 20 also has been announced. So the aggregate transport bandwidth is going to increase to all the way up to 77 gigabit per second, which is quite nice. So if we stay with DSC technology, we're essentially be able to achieve display resolution up to 5K by 5K by 120. But by moving to VDCM with 5 bit per pixel, which VDCM is able to do, we can see that with emerging transport technology, we'll be able to carry display resolution all the way up to 8K by 8K by 120 frame per second, which is really what people have forecasted be needed to have, you know, top-of-the-line AR-VR product down the future. So this is clearly an advantage to move to this new compression technology. Finally, let's have a look to the automotive technology, what I call the digital car. So in the car, the number of display is increasing very, very rapidly. I mean, nowadays, people have in their car 1 to 3 display. But moving in the future, I've seen car concept where there's over 12 display inside the car. I know it sounds a little bit crazy, but what are now physical mirror inside the car will become small display on each of the door. Some of what are typically climate control button or turning into small display. There's going to be display in the back of the car for kids to watch video while you're driving them to the daycare. Essentially, instrumentation is transformed from mechanical needle to display. So and heads-up display, so lots of display or plan inside the car. And so number of display is increasing rapidly, but also spatial resolution of display is increasing. A mid-range car right now would use 1280 by 720p type resolution, which is about 100 dpi, and would consume about 1.8 gigabit per second. But moving the car in the future, the car maker will not increase the physical size of display because obviously the car aren't getting wider. You're never going to have a 55 inches display inside your car, but the pixel density will increase. So they're going to use 4 UHD style resolution in the car, and that's going to drive a display from 1.8 to 14 gigabit per second. So if you have much higher bandwidth and many more display, there's going to be some kind of a challenge there. So looking at the technology of transport inside car today, typically there's many competing technology like Maxim, GMSL, Apex from Inova in Germany, Valens has a technology called HD-based T. Typically today, they average about 6 gigabit per second bandwidth. Obviously, we're working on the AFI within MIPI, so there's a forecast that's going to increase over time to 12, 14 gigabit per second, but today it's about 6 gigabit per second. And it's quite challenging to increase the PHY technology inside the car. You know, the car is a noisy environment. There's a great deal of electromagnetic noise inside the car, and reliability and is a key element. There's complex and long process of certification, so it's a challenging environment. To add up to this, you know, if there's going to be a lot more display inside car, well, there's going to be a lot more cables, but you know, car maker don't like cables. It might be surprising to hear, but the cable harness inside a car is the third most expensive component to manufacture a car, and also the third heaviest component. So if you're looking for fuel consumption, to be reduced. It's not by adding a ton of cable that you're going to do well there. So basically, car makers don't like cables. So that's going to be very challenging. So the idea is to use compression technology inside the car to keep control over the cabling. So essentially, inside the car, if there's going to be a lot of source of video and sync display device, the idea is to essentially add a video compression engine at every video source, and a video decompression engine at every display. And between the two, essentially carry the video inside the car always in the compressed domain to save on the bandwidth. So by doing this, you're able to transfer higher resolution video in a given cable, or you're able to transport multiple stream of video inside one cable. So essentially, if in the past, if in the past you would have like, you know, stream number one in cable one, stream B in cable two, and stream C in cable three, essentially by applying compression, you squeeze, if you have three time compression, you squeeze three video stream inside one cable, and typically you would do this in creating very small packet of data, and if you do it that way, you can transfer over a given cable multiple video stream. You can carry additional other data like sensor data, audio data inside the same transport. And if you make small packet like this, you keep the cost low in terms of data buffering and also preserving very low latency, which is an important factor inside the car. So that's really the way that people are going about designing video subsystem inside car, is to use multi-stream transport technology. So I mentioned that display is increasing rapidly. So kind of maybe moving to the next slide. So effectively, this, you know, if we look at it practically, and I'll take the example of the display moving in the future. So let's say I have 12 display at UHD resolution, and I have a transport technology of 12 gigabit per second. How many cable is it going to require to support my implementation? Well, if I don't have any compression technology, and each of the display requires 14.4 gigabit per second, I'm going to need roughly between one to two cable per display. So the totally, I would need, let's say, best case, 12 cables. If I use VESA DSC technology, at 8-bit per pixel, I basically compress the display down to 4.8 gigabit. So I would need a total of 6 cable inside my car to satisfy this application. But if I use VDCM at, say, 5-bit per pixel, and now I'm down to 3 gigabit per pixel per stream, I'm only going to need 3 cables. So you see a huge benefit to go from 12 down to 3 cable. And, you know, car makers are willing to trade some additional silicon to reduce the number of cable and copper inside their car, because they're going to have a huge saving in terms of weight and in terms of cost for the car manufacturing. But using display inside car, one can ask himself, is it safe to do this? You know, obviously, car is an environment where people have to care a lot about safety. And you know, by changing radically the way a car has been used, you have to ask yourself if it's safe. So fortunately, the car industry has a functional safety method based on an ISO standard called ISO 26262. And they define what they call the ASIL requirement. ASIL stands for Automotive Safety Integrity Level. And depending on the system within the car, they have certain safety level that needs to be achieved. For example, the braking system inside the car or the steering are obviously very important device that can greatly affect the safety if they're not working. So they're going to grade them to an ASIL D requirement. And nowadays, for display technology, people identify ASIL B to be the proper safety level. So essentially, the process to do this is to define safety objective inside your car and have those safety goal and identify, looking at different failure mode, what can happen wrong inside my subsystem. You define needs for internal and external diagnostic inside your subsystem that you put in place to ensure that you achieve the source safety level. So for example, if I have ASIL B, I need to make sure that I can detect 90% of single point failure, 60% of latent fault failure, and that's going to allow me to achieve a probabilistic metric of 10 minus 7 per hour, or let's say a failure every 10 million hour. So this is the process. And a designer that designed video compression technology for the car industry requires to go through a process called an FMEDA analysis, which is failure mode effect and diagnostic analysis. So we've done this for car, and I'll use the example of a head unit display for, let's say, a backup camera. You want to make sure that the video always works, but also that it will never have, let's say, a frozen frame. You're backing up your car, you're looking at your display, you want to make sure that what you're seeing is what's really happening. So if you had, for example, the frozen image, maybe you think there's nothing behind the car, but there's a children. Obviously, you wouldn't like that to happen. So you define your safety goal, for example, no frozen frame, no corrupted pixel, no glitches, that sort of stuff. And then, from those safety goal, you basically analyze your IP. This is, say, a video compression IP, and you define some internal and external safety diagnostic where you basically add circuitry to your IP to make sure that you can detect fault inside your IP. So you would add things like error correction code inside RAM structure, some built-in self-test, that sort of thing. You could also add some external safety diagnostic. So, for example, in the case of the frozen frame, one approach would be to add some CRC or watermark inside your video frame over the complete video flow process from the camera to the display, and making sure that the display always keep tracks of the code to make sure that the code is changing and that there is no frozen frame inside the system. So I'm reaching the conclusion of my presentation. So, clearly the display technology is bandwidth requirement is increasing extremely fast, even faster in the future. PHY technology has difficulty to keep up, so by the use of clever and better compression technology such as VDCM, which has been adopted by MIPDSI2, we can enjoy designing better and more performant product, and those can be used safely inside application like car. If you'd like to get a better look at what this compression technology looks like, we're showing it in next door at the Hardened booth. And you're going to be able to see that the picture quality is basically as good as uncompressed video, but you know the bandwidth is 6 times smaller. I added to my slide also some link to some website if you want to find out more about this technology. You know, when you get the slide, you can reach out to these links. So thank you.
All right. Are there any questions for Alon? We have a question here. Oh, I thought someone raised their hand. I'm sorry. All right. So, Alon, what is the latency with using VDCM?
Good question, and important question, especially in some application like AR, VR, or automotive. You want to keep latency super low. So the VDCM algorithm used 2.5 line horizontal line buffer, 2.5 in the encoder, 2.5 in the decoder. So from end to end, you have 5 horizontal lines. So I'll take the example of 4K60. 5 line at 4K60 is 1.2 microsecond. So we're talking about like, you know, 1 or 2 microseconds, which is super low, far below what the human can perceive, and I think makes it acceptable for any application, including application where safety is critical.
All right. Any other questions? Where can I pick up the VDCM spec?
So VDCM is a VESA standard specification. So you go on the VESA website, www.vesa.org, and there is a link to the display codec technology, and you can download it. It's a free download. It's an open standard, so all you are required to use this is to become a VESA member, and it's royalty-free technology to the industry.
All right.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.